Welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast. My friends, Kevin Swanson with you. Also, Dave Buhner in studio with me today as we pick up the pieces of a hopelessly fragmented society. During the breakdown of Western civilization, breakdown of the family, 42% of kids born without fathers, up from 6% in 1960, and 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, which means that they're not getting married, they don't have jobs, and you have way, way more girls. Almost twice the percentage of girls with college degrees by 23 years of age now. And I think one of the most significant statistics that really marks the massive, massive social shifts we've seen in the last 30 years, you have three times the percentage of girls in college today as 30 years ago, meaning that these girls will not get married, they will not get MRS degrees, they will wind up providing for way, way more of the economic well-being of the nation than the men the same age, which means also they won't be married by the time they're 30 years of age. In fact, people are getting married later, far, far later than any other time in American history, from what I understand, at least since they started collecting the statistics for marriage age. So evidently, Americans are not getting married, and largely because young men are not growing up, and the girls are having a hard time with this. And this is one reason why this new article from World Magazine, I think, is so significant, Dave. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. Christianity Today has been doing similar articles like this. There are so many, many pressures on Christian young people today because the population is not growing up. Young men are not growing up. That's the zeitgeist of the day. That's where things are today. And when you have the average evangelical, the average reformed Christian young man and young woman basically living the same lifestyle, except for the fact they're not supposed to have sex until they get married, with that small exception, there are, I think, more pressures on the average young person, young Christian person in college today than say, 30, 40 years ago. Dave, I mean, the unbelievers don't have to worry about some of the same issues that believers have to worry about. And this is something that World Magazine treated in their article, still haven't found what I'm looking for. They start with a secular college made up, by the way, 80% female students. The rest of them, or many of them, are gay. So unfortunately, the prospects of getting married for these young women are very, very bad. What he says about the average college scene, not the Christian college scene, but the average college scene, he says they embody the stereotype of a younger generation that sees nothing wrong with hooking up or cohabiting before marriage. Skeptical about the possibility of lifelong love, they readily list downsides to marriage. A few admit that they would like to marry for friendship, to ward off loneliness, for support, but even they see marriage as a constricting, depriving them of freedom and the ability to focus on their careers. He quotes a 19-year-old from South Africa, says, "I don't believe in marriage at all. If your family is attached to the ritual and ceremony, you'll want to do it, but otherwise, we don't think it's necessary." Her family agrees. Her dad has lived with his girlfriend for 16 years. So here in general, these students don't associate marriage with either childbearing or sex. It is one avenue among many to personal happiness, period. They see no right destination, no right way to get there. Anything that's mutually acceptable goes. That's where things are. That's where things are among the 85% or 90% or whatever of the secularists. They're not getting married. They don't care about marriage. 95, 98% of them are having sex outside of marriage. And it's just one big chaotic mess. Dave, I think what we're seeing here among the masses is the death of marriage, the death of family. We talk about 42% of kids born without fathers, but we're also talking about birth implosions. I mean, this generation won't have more than 1.2, 1.3 kids per family. And if they do have kids, they're not going to be married. They're going to be 42% of them not getting married prior to having the child, and a huge percentage of them will be living in single-parent households.
Kevin, I think that the majority of the children in the colleges today, and they are children, do not know what a real family is.
Yeah.
You talk about 42% being born without a father. Well, of the remaining, 50% of their families have probably ended in divorce, and the others have been not a very functional family. I was really in one course in a college class, this was decades ago, meant to feel somewhat ostracized that I came from a non-dysfunctional family. You know, I had a father and a mother. They loved each other. Dad worked outside of the home. Mom supported that. There was five children in the house. We all went to church.
Weirdos.
And there was like, well, you don't even, there's something wrong with you.
That was in the 1970s, 1980s. Well, think about where it is today. Think about where it is today, where you're going to have 60 to 70% of these kids not growing up with mother and father in a home where they are nurtured by mother and father. I'd say you're going to have 80 to 90% of kids not growing up with mother and father in homes where there were kids being raised by mother and father, where they're not in a latchkey condition under 6 years of age. That's going to be rare. Really, really, really rare. Functional families will be extremely rare, which means that, for the most part, Dave, I think, in many of the states around the union, we're going to see a lot of families being persecuted. Why? Because you have legislators, you have governors, you have leaders in your society that have not been raised by mothers and fathers in functional homes. I mean, men like Barack Obama, for example.
And Kevin, according to this article, it gets worse the younger you are. Based on just how old you are, how you view marriage. If you're had married parents while growing up, those who are 65 and older, that accounts for about 89% of them. Today, it accounts for about 24% of them. That's those who believe in growing variety of family structure is a good thing. Now, think about that. Today, if you're 65 or older, only 24% of you have given up marriage. But the millennial generation, 46% of them are ready to give up marriage.
Yeah, yeah. Among the great generation, 24% were roughly giving up on marriage. Now the millennials, you have 46%. Yeah, it's up with each successive generation. By the way, the views on homosexuality is the same way. Pew Research did a extensive study on that and found that the millennials were far, far more likely to support homosexuality, evolution, socialism than the great generation, the boomer generation, the Gen X generation. So, Dave, with each successive generation you have viewpoints where these people are no longer seeing the family, the nuclear family, as important. I mean, we're talking half of the society. In 20, 30 years from now, half of the society will not consider the family to be important at all. At all. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're falling off the cliff. Now, what's happening with Christians? Christians are trying to retain somewhat of a conservative edge. They still have a high view of marriage. And most evangelical Christians, believe it or not, still believe that fornication outside of the bonds of marriage is not acceptable. Nevertheless, they do it. And I think the rates are fairly high. The article does not bring that out. Again, looking at the World Magazine, still haven't found what I'm looking for article. And the problem is there's all kinds of pressures on these young people. Apparently the girls are getting tired of this whole courtship model. In other words, a lot of kids read I Kissed Dating Goodbye back in 2003 when Josh Harris wrote the book. But now they're thinking, well, this book's kind of a pain. And a lot of these girls aren't being asked out, which means that nobody's taking interest in them. And this is a problem. Think about these girls, Dave, hanging around in college, and nobody's really taking an interest in them. I mean, that's a problem. They're 22 years old, they're 23, they're 24, they're 25, they're 26. They haven't been asked out. That's a huge problem for a lot of these girls, especially when they attend colleges where you've got a fairly large girl-to-boy ratio. And my guess is that's the way it is with Patrick Henry College and a lot of these Christian colleges.
Yeah, it is a concern. There are many women who are getting in their mid-20s, as you say, and Prince Charming hasn't shown up, let alone Prince Charming. Lucky Charms hasn't shown up. Nobody's shown interest into them. They're wondering, where are all the guys? Where are all the guys who are getting interested in marriage? Well, it turns out the guys are just as frustrated, too, by this model.
Student after student, four states, generalized to me, women don't get asked out. Women don't get asked out, which means they're waiting for the men to take action. They want the men to ask them out, which means I'm guessing they want to get married. I mean, that's my guess. Otherwise, why else are they attending college? Well, I guess for a career. But you know what, Dave? There's a lot of people out there, a lot of young ladies, by the time they hit 22, 23 years of age, they want to get married. They want that relationship. They want to have a family. Why? Because God hardwired them for family. Well, friends, that's not the socioeconomic milieu out there.
And
that's,
Kevin,
not the environment.
That's what's not stated in the article. These are girls who are at a college, be it King's College or Patrick Henry College, whatever the college is. The women are at a college. Now, why are the women at a college? Now, if a guy is looking for a wife, is he looking for somebody who's getting a pre-law degree? And I ask this question seriously. If you're sending your daughter to college, are you preparing her for to be a wife, or are you preparing her to prepare legal briefs? There is a difference in preparation. And so I think the patience is being vexed here because maybe, just maybe, Kevin, we're not putting our daughters in the right situations. And then, of course, there's the problem with the guys. The guys aren't looking for wives.
And they're not ready to get married, 70% of whom aren't grown up by 30 years of age, up to 30% in 1970. And my guess is that affects most of these guys attending Patrick Henry College as much as it affects the public and private school folks. that are raised in public and private schools. Well, friends, you know, right now we've got a huge challenge, a huge social challenge, lots of pressures on these girls. And the pressures are the fact that they're probably not getting married in college, which means they got to get out, get careers, and maybe, just maybe, find somebody out there to marry them in the future business environment in which they find themselves. Another pressure that I think is really a significant pressure is these young men and young women understand you can't have sexual activity outside of the bonds of marriage. But, Dave, what happens is, my guess is you have young men and young women, by the time they're 19, 20, 21, 22 years of age, they're burning. And of course, it's better to marry than to burn is a basic principle that Paul gives us in 1 Corinthians 7. But these guys are burning, and that's a problem. That's a huge problem. And if they're burning, they got to get married. Problem. How can they get married if nobody's really prepared economically for marriage? I mean, the guy's making $200 a month working at the cafeteria in the college. How in the world is this guy ready for marriage?
Kevin, people used to get married in far worse economic situations. It could be that we have not created a good vision for marriage or a good economic vision for our sons, or we have too high of an expectation. If it's going to take a guy 8 years to get prepared to have the right kind of job to have a wife, in other words, he's going to be 28 before he's prepared, then we have a huge socio problem on our hands. My guess is that we're delaying maturity in the very way that we teach in homeschool even our sons. I don't think we're pushing them hard enough. I don't think we're giving them responsibility enough. I don't think we're putting them out in the workforce early enough. And there's lots of reasons for that. But I have a 15-year-old, as you know, is working his own business. And not because I'm such a great dad, but mostly because he wanted to go out and do something. And the idea that he would have to wait another 8 years to get married is so offensive to him.
Yeah.
And he's 15, mind you.
Yeah.
I think his goal is to get married.
He's thinking about marriage now. Thinking about getting married about 3-4 years from now.
He's looked across the aisle and he says, woman is good. And he's heard his father say, he who finds a wife finds a good thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to find one.
There's a lot of young men that ought to be married at 19 or 20 or 21. They ought to be married. Why? Because they need to get married, because it's better to marry than to burn, because they need to be in that relationship, because God hardwired that into them. And hey, that's the way it works. And if we've got this system that makes it impossible for a young man to grow up by the time he's 20, 21, or he's got to go to college, he can't get out before he's 25, he's got to get a job. Of course, 50% of kids getting out of college now are jobless, at least they're not getting jobs in their own field. We've got a huge problem on our hands. We've got a system that isn't working. Dave, I think, the first thing we got to do is lower our expectations in some ways. In some ways, we need to raise our expectations in the area of spiritual leadership, the area of just getting out there and being diligent Monday morning at 8 a.m., you know, these sorts of things. Men need to be out there, and they got to get a vision for marriage. They got to get a vision for leading a household. They got to get a vision for some of these things. But the idea that they've got to be making $38,000 a year or $52,000 a year and living in some upscale condo and driving a BMW that's got a $40,000 loan against it, that's a joke. I mean, that's a joke. I'm looking for young men to marry my daughters who are responsible, hardworking, spiritual leaders. And, Dave, I mean, maybe they're not making more than $24,000 a year. Maybe that's all they've got. Maybe they're out making $7, $8, $9 an hour. Maybe they're just barely making it with their entrepreneurial plumbing business. But they're pulling in a little bit. They're out there. They're working. They're willing to apply themselves. And they've got some little bit of income. They're living in maybe a little mobile home somewhere. They've got, you know, 700 square feet or what have you. But they're able to get started, and they're able to get started at a fairly low level. They're not materialists, which would be a high priority for me. I don't want my daughters marrying some materialist who's got to be way deep into debt for a 6-bedroom house, 3-car garage, or got that Beamer going at the $45,000 car loan. No, I don't want any of that. I don't want a materialist. I want a guy who's willing to work under his own car and fix his car and keep his, you know, $2,000 clunker moving. And maybe he's making $26,000, $28,000 a year, but he's able to provide for that household. And he's willing to slowly build up his household wealth over a long period of time. But he's not really a materialist at heart. And I think that's key for me.
That is key. And I think there's so many fathers and daughters and sons and mothers out there who are materialists. When you set an expectation that a man has to have such and such a career before you can approach your daughter, you're essentially saying that my daughter's a materialist and you have to feed her materialist frenzy. And when you take the vows and you say for richer or poor, you only mean for richer or less richer.
For 60K a year or 48K a year. That's about it.
The thing is that God has a way of humbling men who put their confidence in riches, in their jobs, in their investments, in their gold, silver, or real estate. All of those things have bubbles. They all pop. What I'm looking for, if you want to marry my daughter, I want you to be a man of God who is willing to get out and lead my daughter spiritually and love her with all you got, whether that's $20,000 or $200 million. I want you to love my daughter. Now, the fact that men are being told they're not qualified to go court somebody's daughter because they don't have the right economic status, they haven't accomplished the right education, this is very, very frustrating to our girls. Because you know what? Whether the guys are prepared or not, there's only so many guys out there.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we get back, we're going to take this from the guy's perspective. We looked at it from the girl's perspective just a little bit. When we get back, from the guy's perspective, the guys who aren't dating, the guys who want to date, the guys who want to court, how do they do it? How do they engage? And when will they be ready to do so? We'll be talking about that in just a moment on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson here, also Dave. Be back in just a moment. Folks, believe it or not, this is our eighth year on the air. Our first broadcast was October 3rd, 2003. From the beginning, we produced the program as a commercial endeavor, and then 2 years ago decided to rely entirely on listener support. And by God's grace, we're making some progress. But this is fundraising month. Each year, we target 100 sponsors to keep us on the air for one more year. And we're hoping that by God's grace, we will be on the air for one more year. If you find the ideas helpful on this program, if you receive some discipleship, some encouragement yourself, please consider supporting our program. We know that we have about 500,000 listeners a year from 80 countries around the world. We have people in Sweden, Ireland, Australia, England, many of whom have no other encouragement for the kind of ideas they get on this program. But they get it here on Generations. They're encouraged every day by what they hear on this radio broadcast from my basement out on the eastern plains of Colorado. So if you listen to the program or watch us, you know what we're all about. Family, fathers, freedom, faith, home-based discipleship, family-based economies, relationships in a cold and lonely world, worldview and discipleship, truth and relationships, a vision for future generations. That's what we're all about. And we are so privileged to get the very best speakers, pastors, fathers, Christian leaders in the country. Talk about worldview and family issues. Folks like Mike Farris, Ken Ham, Vody Bauckham, Al Mohler's been here, Paul David Tripp, R.C. Sproul, Phyllis Schlafly, David Noble, Tim Challies, Nancy Percy, Wayne Grudem, Sam Crabtree, and Dave. Dave Buhner, he's a regular on the program. Well, folks, we don't get a lot of psychobabble flim-flam on this program, because we don't want to raise up more weaky-weaky fruits for generations to come. Our desire is a vision that will cast for future generations and will encourage and inspire many generations and hopefully rebuild faith, family, and freedom during the breakdown of Western civilization. That's what we're doing out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. If you'd like to support the program, just simply go to our website, kevinswanson.com, and click on Support the Program and join our fundraising campaign for May. Our target is 100 sponsors for the month of May. 100 sponsors for the month of May at $10 a month, $20 a month, or $50 a month, or even a one-time donation. Friends, if you would like to support the program, kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, Kevin Swanson with you today as we talk about the pressures on young men and young women who are not getting married. They're going to college, they're having a hard time finding a mate and getting married. Pressures on the young woman include the fact that they're not getting married in college. There's a way, way high boy-to-girl or girl-to-boy ratio in the colleges. And there's not a whole lot of protection from fathers, largely because fathers don't really want to take the time. And girls often don't have the relationships with their fathers where they would want to invite their fathers to really get involved and protect protect them in these courting relationships. And I don't see a whole lot of this in among your average college kid, Dave. I mean, we could talk about courtship all day long, but when it really comes down to it, most of these kids will be emancipated. They're not going to have much interest in their fathers saying anything about the kind of guys they get married to. The fathers are not going to be involved all that much in the courtship. That's just the way it is. So these girls are not going to be protected. The boys are probably a little concerned that they're going to be emotionally burned or burn some girl emotionally if they advance upon the girl and suggest some kind of a dating relationship with the girl. And then the other problem, of course, is that nobody's really growing up all that much. And you just mentioned off air, Dave, there's a modern family you ran into. Why don't you describe that family for us?
Oh yeah, it's multiple generations living under the same roof. They're both men.
So it's a multi-generational vision here.
Yeah, multi-generational. They're both men. They're both divorced. You know, so the son has moved in with the father. They've pooled their resources, and the son was probably in the 30s, and the father somewhere around 50, and the father was wearing a cut-off shirt and, you know, had the modern sports stuff on, and the son had the tattoo. But the father went, it was very touching. He went to the store and drove and came back, and he had 2 six-packs of beer.
The beer run.
Yeah, they were looking forward to having
a
real nice
generational vision. Yeah, multi-generational vision, sort of the father-son relationship there in the modern family.
Yeah.
Well, there it is, friends. That's pretty much what's going on. And actually, World Magazine, just a week or two ago, came out with an interesting article. This is Janie Cheney. She talks about a nation of Terrys. Slacker descendants of the post-war middle class are depleting America's social capital. Talks about social scientist Charles Murray. Says there's a new lower class, pleasant, inoffensive folks who consume more than they produce. One divorced or never married guy living with his parents is not a problem. Millions of them are. One single mom raising her children on the fly can be absorbed by society, but millions of them cannot. What's most disturbing is that this new lower class, descended from the mid-20th century middle class, the post-war generation that participated in the greatest surge of prosperity the world has ever known, they stayed married, went to church, joined the PTA. Their children and grandchildren do not. Or not consistently. They break their family bonds. That leads to the severing of countless minor connections, the kind that holds society together and help families regulate themselves. There's plenty of blame to go around. The peoples of the greatest generations did not discipline their children in an enabling welfare state. The welfare willful abdication of personal responsibility and failing to call sin what it is. The only solution to all this is strong families, strong churches. Families do not disparage the church. Churches do not neglect the family. God has ordained both for society's benefit. That's Janie Cheney, A Nation of Terrys, in the recent World Magazine. What she's saying is exactly what we say on the air all the time, Dave. We've got the weakest families you could possibly imagine here in this country. You have the breakdown of family relationships. You have families that could care less what their children are doing. You have 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, thanks to the fact that there are 64% of kids under 6 that are latchkey. I mean, we repeat these things again and again on the air, but it comes down to the fact that family relationships aren't what they should be. Therefore, these young men aren't ready to get married.
They're not ready to get married for lots of reasons. One of them, of course, is economic. We've referred to that already. But also, young men are frightened because the chances are pretty good if they approach a young lady for marriage that down the road she will desert him.
They're going to get divorced. He's afraid they'll get burned or divorced.
Divorced.
And here's a big one from Vox Day. Vox Day on WorldNet Daily this morning, he came out with an article saying you've got to be really careful with this marital roulette. And he says, be very careful about marrying career women. Now, this kind of article has come out several times. Fortune magazine did the same article a couple years ago. Be very careful about marrying career women. But here's the catch-22. A lot of these women feel like they have to be career women because they have to make a living. And if they're not going to get married, then they're going to have to make a living in the meantime. Well, here's Vox Day saying, be very careful about marrying career women.
Yeah, I mean, what young man wants to wake up one morning and find out he's locked into a life with a post-divorce serfdom? That is, he's having to pay for everything because the men always lose in the courts with an ill-tempered, overweight woman with legal obligations to children who are not even his. And this is the nightmare scenario. And you end up, Kevin, with a dog chasing its tail. Women need to have a career because they're going to get divorced. Men don't want to marry the women who have a career because they're going to get divorced.
Because they have a 30% higher probability of divorce if they marry a career woman.
So what's not happening? Why would men, and this is a college professor used to say to the class, why would men buy a cow if they get the milk for free? And unfortunately, that's the situation. In Fornication Nation, men are not going to get married. When women don't care about their own virtue and purity, don't expect the men to protect it. And thus we have the destruction of America and the destruction of the family as we know it.
Well, that's precisely what this article from World Magazine, it's Inset Magazine article from the article, still haven't found what I'm looking for. It's A Man's World. Marvin Alasky does a little review on premarital sex in America by Mark Regnerus and Jeremy Wecker. And apparently these guys from the University of Texas, University of North Carolina, have discovered that men are pretty much getting whatever they want at the college campus. And the fact that there are way, way more girls on campus than men usually yields a much higher fornication rate on these campuses. I didn't realize that. Apparently where there's a high girl-to-boy ratio, way more fornication. Now, why? And I'll tell you the reason why is because girls are looking for attention. And they want some security, they want some attention, they want some affection, and they might get a little bit here and there, not getting it from their dad, not getting it in some marriage, some functional marriage situation. So they're going to get it where they can get it, and unfortunately, according to this article, they're being used. The sexual economics of college campuses now empower men at the expense of women, according to this book by Mark Regnerus and Jeremy Ucker. The book's called Premarital Sex in America.
Make no mistake, the women are using the men, too, and everybody's using everybody. And it's basically use whoever you can type of society. The whole problem, Kevin, not the whole problem, but a major part of this problem is that fathers are not protecting their daughters. Yeah. If fathers won't protect daughters, you can't expect brothers to protect their sisters. You can't expect men who are going to date your daughters to protect their virtue. Nobody is doing the protection. Now, in the Bible, women had to be protected. It took somebody, a father or an agent of the father, to protect women. Women wouldn't even travel unless there was somebody to escort them to protect their purity and to protect their person. Occasionally, you might have two older women traveling together, but never, never would you send a single woman off to a co-ed campus or off to a foreign city. The idea of sending your children to New York City to an art school and thinking that they're going to have positive sexual encounters is insanity.
And, Dave, I'm getting those stories on a fairly regular basis these days from even homeschool fathers who do the same thing. And, Dave, I think it comes back to this, and I think you nailed it, fathers, fathers, fathers. I mean, we are in total dysfunctionality. And the only way we're going to get out of this mess is if fatherhood is revived in some way, shape, or form. If the fathers do not get a vision for fatherhood and what it is to be that protector, what it is to be that man of God, spiritually nurturing and being responsible for the spiritual nurture of their daughters and sons into the future marriages, friends, we are going to see nothing but dysfunctionality among the evangelicals, among the homeschoolers. Among the mass culture. I mean, this isn't just inner city where 70% of young men are 70% of kids are born without fathers. This is everywhere now. It's metastasizing everywhere. Unless fatherhood is revived, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble, friends. Without fathers getting a vision, we are in trouble. We've got to restore the hearts of fathers to the sons and sons to the fathers and fathers to the daughters and daughters to the fathers. If this doesn't happen, if these fundamental relationships aren't rebuilt, friends, forget the society, forget the social units, and forget the battle against socialism. Dave, as you know, the number one socialist voting bloc in America are single women, independent career women, independent women who are floating around their colleges, trying to get a degree, trying to get a career. These are the women who will vote socialist every time. Why? Because they're independent of the family, independent of fathers, independent of husbands, but very, very, very dependent on the corporations, on their Benny packages, very, very, very dependent upon the state and socialist welfare programs that support them when their marriages don't work out. Well, folks, the only way we're going to salvage any kind of freedom, the only way we're going to rebuild the family in this country is going to be by fathers, by restoring the relationship of fathers and daughters, fathers and sons, and by restoring a godly manhood in the marriage. It's obviously a two-part thing here, Dave. We've got to have girls willing to honor their own fathers, submit to their own fathers in the homes. And you know, we get story after story after story of women that just hate their fathers. They don't want to honor their fathers. They've been abused by their fathers, or their relationship with their fathers has been trashed by their own doing and by their father's poor fathering. And these stories are everywhere, everywhere. When we have a hard enough time maintaining the relationships of fathers and daughters and fathers and sons within our own churches. These things are major issues. And unless we improve on the relationships of fathers and children in the present age, we're going to continue to see a breakdown of marriage and family in the years to come.
Gavin, I think we have a two-part problem. The first is preparation for marriage. Fathers need to teach their sons to guard their son's purity. That is, the son is not to become some kind of predator seeking a woman. He's to guard the woman's purity as he would his sister. Hopefully he would do that for his sister also. The father has to teach a daughter to value her purity, and the father needs to show her to value the value of that by protecting it, by not letting her be alone. These go hand in hand.
And try not to dump your daughter into the worst, most dangerous high school in the San Francisco Bay Area and leave her there without a chaperone on homecoming night. I mean, one of the most horrendous stories I've ever read was that Christian father who dumped his daughter out there, and then we saw the whole Gibeah thing happen where the daughter was taken advantage of by just as dangerous men.
To drop her off at the local church youth group.
Yeah.
You know, fathers, you need to protect, you need to chaperone your daughters. Now, the other end of this equation, that's preparing for marriage. The other end of this equation that we need to work on is the marriage itself. If we have purity going into marriage, we have to make sure that the marriage and the satisfaction in marriage is such a bright light in a dark world that people will desire that kind of relationship. So we can't do it if we're falling apart and we're hating each other and ending in divorce.
And Dave, as we said, pansexuality is turning into asexuality. We mentioned that a couple of weeks ago on this program. And certainly the world is not going to present any kind of a satisfactory situation for sexuality, friends. They've been celebrating their deviant, pansexual, do whatever you want with whatever you want sort of thing for the last 10 or 15 years. That's ending. We're moving more towards an asexual environment, I think, in the years to come, which means massive, massive birth implosions and not very many marriages, not very many families. But I think with Christians, we can continue to celebrate the best sexuality you can possibly imagine in God's law order, because maximum freedom, maximum liberty comes under God's law. And I'll just add maximum joy, maximum rejoicing. It will go well with you in the land if you live according to God's law system. And if we bring God's social system back into play and we bring our daughters and our future sons-in-laws together and our future sons and future daughter-in-laws together in godly marriages in a decent sort of way, we don't put it off for umpteen years, but we bring them together and they celebrate that sexuality and they have more children and develop strong families based in that marital unit. Friends, we are going to see a massive difference between the dysfunctionality going on in colleges today and going on in the wider society today and what's happening within our healthy communities. We're going to see a massive difference. And so, friends, we got to wrap up the program now, and let me just encourage you to support the program if you can with your donations. I just heard from one of our guys that we're just around 60 donors for our fundraising program to keep this program on the air for the next year. If you would like to be one of those 100 donors that we're targeting, we need 40 more, friends, and we're just about at the end of our fundraising campaign. If you want to be one of those 40 donors, please go to our website right now and sign up to provide $10 a month, $20 a month, or $50 a month to keep this program on the air. Go to kevinswanson.com and click on donation right now. Also, let me recommend to you an excellent little resource on our product page called Her Hand in Marriage by Douglas Wilson, one of the very best books, most balanced books I know of on the issue of courtship. Again, it's Doug Wilson's book, Her Hand in Marriage, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.